So, a master once said, "There is nothing in particular to realize. Just rid yourself of the notion of Buddhas and sentient beings." This is a very, very important point in our practice, is to rid ourselves of the notion of Buddhas and sentient beings, of people who have something and people who don't have it. Why? Because in this practice, this very unique practice, which really, in a way, goes in the opposite direction of the ordinary world, kind of an upside-down world here. If you were to harbor in your mind an idea that there's something that you don't have that someone else has, something you lack that you're going to get by doing zazen, then you're repeating the same old way of mind. It's exactly the same. Just repeating it. It's very natural to do that. We've been trained to think that way. We've been trained to see the world that way. We're so deeply trained in that way of seeing the world and thinking and acting that it is automatic. So one of the very key aspects of this mindfulness meditation that we call Zazen is that we start to undermine the automaticities of our thinking. But this habit of comparing, this habit of thinking that there's something out there, if only I were to get it, then I would be enlightened, then I would be a Buddha, then I would be happy, then I would be perfect, is very hard to uproot. It's very deep in there. So we start to look at, am I doing Zazen the right way? Am I focusing properly? Am I getting anywhere? Am I walking right? Am I walking like a Zen student? Am I distracted right now? What happens? All of a sudden, we're split in two. We have the checking mind watching us, and we have the entity being watched. We've split ourselves in two. So, once again, there's nothing in particular to realize. Just rid yourselves of the notion of Buddhas and sentient beings. In other words, those who are very special, they have something, they're enlightened, we call them Buddhas. And sentient beings, ignorant beings caught in a world of delusion. I'm going to read you a koan from the Mumon Khan, just to highlight this a little more clearly. So the Mumon Khan, just for those of you who are not familiar with it, is a collection of 48 koan. And koan are these profound questions that teachers utilize with students at a certain point in the training if they seem to have a proclivity for it, an affinity for it, to pierce down below the surface of things. So koan involve stories. They're actual events in the annals of Zen, and some of them are apocryphal. But they have a deep point, and the point is couched. It's not explained in the ordinary way. You might almost call it a kind of poetry. You have to really pierce beneath the surface of it. You have to use your deep zazen and the wisdom that you gain from every moment of sitting in order to get underneath and get the gist of what the masters are saying through these koan. Now, the initial koan that are assigned to students are called breakthrough koan, and they're very, very stark and very simple and very sharp. And they're almost like battering rams or drills. They help you drill down to the bedrocks of all this stuck thinking to a very fundamental place, a place where suddenly you can understand things in a completely different way. So the classic two koan that we tend to use here are the koan mu and the koan hu, as in who am I. But after you've gone through these particular breakthrough koan, then you don't stop. We continue through this whole series of koan. There are actually hundreds of koan. There are actually thousands of koan. In our particular school of practice, if we were to go all the way through the very end of the curriculum, you would do 400 or 500 koan. Each one is holding up this truth, one aspect of which I described initially when I said, there's nothing in particular to realize, just rid yourselves of the notion of Buddhas and sentient beings. From every angle, all these different angles, and enabling one who works with his koan to take this profound understanding and apply it in all different facets of life. This very lengthy, painstaking, diligent practice. So this koan here is actually number 26 in the Mumonkan. And the title of this is Two Monks Roll Up the Bamboo Blinds. And it's a beautiful koan, and I've read it before. And it's just so wonderful. One of my very favorite koan. I'm going to read it to you now. This is the case. It's really simple. The monks gathered in the hall to hear the great Hogan of Seiryo talk to the monks before the midday meal. Hogan pointed to the bamboo blinds, which were unfolded. They were down, you know, the roll-up blinds, kind of like the ones in this room. Pointed to the blinds, which were unfolded. At this, two monks went to the blinds and rolled them up alike. Hogan said, "One has it, the other does not." What a strange koan, huh? What is this koan showing? First of all, what does Hogan mean? One has it, the other has not. We don't know exactly what he means by that. Has what? One is awakened and the other doesn't. One has awakening. One understands their true nature and one does not understand the true nature. Whatever it is in the mind of the monk that is the distinguishing factor between a monk that really has it and a monk that doesn't have it, that's what Hogan is pointing at. This is the hook in this koan. This is the thing that gets you and grabs you. It's a barb that gets under your skin and you can't pull it out. But why did he say that? They went up to the blinds, he pointed to the blinds. It's midday. And he didn't even say roll up the blinds, he just pointed at them. Two monks got up and started rolling up the blinds. And they rolled them up alike. And Hogan said, "One has it, the other does not. One's a Buddha, the other's a sentient being." What is this world where there are some people who are Buddhas and some who are sentient beings and some who are better than others, smarter than others, kinder than others? What is that realm? That's the human realm. We live in that realm. That's the realm that we've been taught since we were infants to navigate in, to create maps about, to learn all the terms of comparison, to split things up into differentiation. It's a very, very critical set of tasks that we learned that enable us to survive. And it is not invalid. There is a truth there. But If you can only be in that realm, which one might call the human condition, if you can only live in that realm, then you can only end up confused, suffering, comparing, coming up short, striving for something, never quite getting it. The human condition. Now that's only one side of reality. This particular teaching, it's called Zen Buddhism, I hesitate to call it anything. This thing we're doing here does not disrespect that side of reality. It's very, very important. It's what I've called before the realm of activity, comparison, map making, navigating, planning, striving. It's called the Nirmanakaya. All right, this is a Sanskrit term. So I talked about this last week, these three realms, which were described early in the history of Buddhism. Now, one thing I should say, I'll just step back for a moment. Every teaching, every worthwhile teaching in this particular path or tradition comes not from belief, it comes from experience. What experience? This, what we're doing here. It comes from deep introspection, deep mindfulness, probing way down to the bottom of one's mind. That's where these teachings come from. If they didn't come from there, they wouldn't last, they wouldn't be of value, they wouldn't continue. The lineage of teachers over 2,500 years wouldn't have continued to teach these particular things because they would have been useless. And there's no need for them, there's no room for them. Remember what the Buddha said. He said, don't take anything I say for gospel. If it applies and appeals and your intellect and reason can accept it and you can resonate with it in your deepest self, then keep it. And if not, throw it out. There's nothing absolute about anything that I'm saying. Everything I'm saying is actually just pointing at something. I can't tell you exactly what it is. I can't put it in words and have you get it. So these are just provisional words, descriptions, teachings, to help point you in a direction. And, you know, what I'm saying tonight and what I say in these teisho is exactly that. There's nothing highfalutin about it, no gospel there. It's just pointing the best I can without creating a set of beliefs and ideas that then become something you either try to match or something that you believe you have by holding with your intellect. So there's a risk there anytime we talk about stuff like this, but it's a risk worth taking. So this Nirmanakaya, this world of activity, which includes all the ways we've learned how to live in the human realm, the maps we make, the comparisons we make, the fact that one has it and the other has not, that realm. Now there's another realm, okay? So you have that Nirmanakaya. The Nirmanakaya layers on top of the next realm. The realm that you might say is one deeper. All right, the realm one deeper is called the Sambhogakaya, which is the world of form. Now form is actuality. It is what can be seen, heard, touched, tasted, smelled, thought about, emoted. Your actual experience. In our Zazen, that's the realm we try to get into deeply, the Sambhogakaya. The Nirmanakaya, we know how to do that. We get stuck there. So in our Zazen, we go deeper than that. We go into the Sambhogakaya. What is the Sambhogakaya? What is this actual world? What is this world of form? Well, if you're counting your breath, it's one, two, three. Following the breath, it's just the actual sensation of the breath. I say this over and over. That's what it is. It's actual. It's the world you can bite into, the world you can grab hold of, the so-called real world. This is the Sambhogakaya. Now, if you try to enter the Sambhogakaya with the Nirmanakaya clinging to you, you really get stuck. Then you start to name these things. You start to split them up and divide them up. You start to see these actual unique elementary experiences, sensations, and you name them. And some you try to reject, some you try to hold on to, some you try to ignore. You're back in Nirmanakaya. That's what happens in our zazen. Our thoughts start up. Am I doing it right? Oh, I'm not getting anywhere. Or sitting in order to try to perfect yourself, make yourself better. There's something you lack. I've got to get clearer. I've got to get calmer. All of a sudden, as the checking mind, you're back in Nirmanakaya. It's very, very difficult. This is an important task in zazen. This is one of the aspects of this practice that really takes courage. And I so admire everyone in this room, but particularly anyone new who's coming into something unfamiliar and willing to jump into the, as I said last week, jump into the deep end of the pool, jump into the cold water without much preparation. Perhaps there's something deep inside, there's something, some faith. It's ill-defined, but it can't be ignored. So for people like that, they somehow, sooner or later, they find themselves in a zendo like this. If that wasn't in there, they wouldn't be here. That's why I said last week, there are no accidents. Things are karmic, cause and effect. So this Sambhogakaya is a realm of cause and effect. Nirmanakaya is too, but particularly Sambhogakaya. Nothing happens in this realm without some pre-existing cause or condition, going all the way back to the very beginning, which physicists call the singularity. So everything spread out, everything goes according to natural law, everything is interconnected in this realm. It is a fabric of space-time. And each of us are located in one particular point in this single fabric, without any particular dividing lines, except those that our mind makes, like has it and does not have it. Buddha and sentient being. Better and worse. All those descriptions that are in the Nirmanakaya, which are quite valid in that realm, but when we enter the Zendo, they are not helping you. They are blocking you. When they arise, you see them as aspects of the Sambhogakaya. Don't float up into that realm and do battle with it. So when these thoughts come up, these comparison thoughts, these feelings of lacking, anxieties, worries, despairs, all these feelings that human beings have, they come up in your zazen too. Matter of fact, they can come up very clearly and very strongly, because your mind is really getting purified in this practice. They come up starkly at times. The task in this particular realm, the Sambhogakaya realm, deeper than this Nirmanakaya surface realm of map-making, planning, thinking, comparing, naming, the task here is to take these things and see them as they are, inevitable, interconnected with everything around them, couldn't have been any different in this moment, because this is in this point in the fabric of time, at this moment in time, this particular emotion, feeling, thought, whatever it might be, had to arise. How do I know it had to arise? Because it arose. Just that. If it didn't have to arise, it wouldn't have arisen, because things only happen one way. So this is just obvious. There's no belief here. It's just obvious. In this realm of Zazen, it's not obvious in the realm of the Nirmanakaya. In the human realm, these things aren't so clear. But when you do this very clear, mindful, attentive Zazen, it becomes obvious that whatever arises in this moment could not have been otherwise, or would not have arose. Something else would have been there. But only one thing happened. What happened was that which our wonderful teacher Richard Clark, who's no longer with us, would always say, had the most going for it. So if it had the most going for it, and it couldn't have been otherwise, then we must embrace it in the Sambhogakaya. Embracing meaning allowing it its moment in the sunshine of your awareness. And that has a name. This allowing something, this embracing quality, allowing the inevitable, incomparable, therefore absolute world of Sambhogakaya, which means your thoughts, feelings, sensations, sounds in the room, smell of the incense, body on the mat, pain in the knee, these inevitable things, when you allow them in the sunshine of your awareness, there's a word for that. It's called Zazen. That's what Zazen is. That's exactly what we're doing. Now we're beginning to go underneath the Nirmanakaya, enter deeply into the Sambhogakaya, the world of actualities. Just one. No meaning. Just two. No meaning. Just breath. Or just car going by. Just pain in my knee. This is the realm, the Sambhogakaya is the realm of just. Even the word just is saying too much. But we have to say something to point at it. So the word just is the pointer. They say, don't mistake the finger for the moon. Someone said, well, yeah, I've never seen the moon. Whoa, there it is. Oh, and you're looking at the finger. The word just is the finger. The Sambhogakaya actuality of your experience plunged into your present moment in Zazen is the moon. Now, when you're there, I want you to tell me, how are you different than a Buddha? How are you a sentient being and someone else a Buddha? How did you not have it and someone else has it? If you're in that realm, those comparisons, those concepts can't enter. They can't go in that realm. They don't fit in that realm. They don't exist in that realm. This is the realm of actualities. This is the just realm. Now the struggle, the difficulty in Zazen is that we are in this realm of just. We're always in that realm. Matter of fact, any moment of the day, whether you're lost in thoughts or not, you're in this Sambhogakaya. These realms are actually all aspects of one thing. They're all one thing. You've got the Nirmanakaya, but the Nirmanakaya is just. It's just that planning, map making. Just. No separation. Inevitable, incomparable, therefore absolute. But when we enter the Sambhogakaya, we can see that. When we're in the Nirmanakaya, stuck in there, we can't see it. We're deluded at that point. We can't see that it's just. When we come here to the Zendo with our dear, dear friends, and we do this silent, profound practice together, which is more intimate than almost anything that human beings can do together. This is true intimacy, to go profoundly into the silence together. We enter this Sambhogakaya, we get it. At that point, there's no difference between Buddhas and sentient beings. So, let me read a little bit more of this koan. So the commentary, this is Mumon, who he was a Zen master who put together these 48 koan, and after each of the stories, which is called a case, he made a commentary, and then he wrote a verse. So I'll read the commentary now. So he said, tell me, which one has it and which one has not? If you have your Zen eye opened at this point, you will then know how Master Serio failed. Remember, Serio, Hogen Serio. Hogen, incidentally, was a master who also figures in a number of these koan, and he is also the monk who went to a Zen master during his travels. He was on a long pilgrimage going to different Zen temples back in the Tang Dynasty, I suppose, when this was the practice of monks. They would go around to different Zen temples. They would go on foot at long distances, take many, many risks. He appeared at night at this Zen hermitage, and the master welcomed him in. And it's a very famous interchange. The master said, where are you coming from? He said, well, I've been on a pilgrimage. He said, what is the reason for your pilgrimage? And there was a silence. Hogen said, I don't know. And Master Jesus said, not knowing is most intimate. And Hogen had a deep awakening. This is that wonderful Hogen. So he says here, tell me, which one has it and which one has not? If you have your Zen eye opened at this point, if you are plunged in the Sambhogakaya, you will then know how Zen Master Serio Hogen failed. Be that as it may, you are strictly warned against arguing about has and has not. Why? When you bring this, your answer to this koan to the Zen master, he warns you, don't argue about one having it and the other having it. Oh, because one of them pulled up the blind like this, and the other one pulled up the blind like this. No, you'll be chased out of the room. The bell will ring. More zazen. So then there's a verse here, and this is really wonderful, and this begins to expose what we've been talking about in a poetic way. So the verse goes like this. When they, and in brackets the screens, when they are rolled up, bright and clear is the great emptiness. You can imagine this rolling up this window in this beautiful zendo overlooking a vastness, maybe some volcano-like mountains in the distance, snow-capped, and just some vastness with mist. So, when they are rolled up, bright and clear is the great emptiness. But the great emptiness does not yet come up to our teaching. When you cast away emptiness and everything, then it is so lucid and perfect that even the wind cannot pass through. So he's kind of using the analogy of the window here. Even the idea of emptiness. Remember, I said this word just. The word just, the word emptiness, the word truth, the word absolute does not come up to this practice. Does not match it. What matches it? You have to find out in your own mind and body. You have to go there. I say go there physically, not even mentally. Leave your thinking aside. Go there with your whole mind and body. Now, when you do zazen, this is a wonderful posture. It's very compact. Everything's connected. Mouth is closed. Tongue touching the teeth. Hands together against your body. Legs folded. Chin in. Little strength in the small of the back. Your back is erect and taut. Your eyes are half open, all your senses are working. Where is your mind and where is your body at that point? Where do you find the dividing line? You can't find the dividing line. This is the space, the place, where just emptiness, Buddhas, sentient beings, do not rise to the level of this practice. This practice is beyond that. Now, we have a little more time, which we do. I'm only going to allude to the third realm. The third realm is the Dharmakaya, so-called the truth realm. Now, if the Sambhogakaya is the realm of your actual experience, your sensory experience, and the Nirmanakaya layers on top of it is a sticky kind of map adherent to it that often blocks our view of it until we do our good zazen like we've been doing today. If you were to flip it over and look underneath the Sambhogakaya, you see the Dharmakaya. The Sambhogakaya, in a way, before we really pierce through it, blocks our view, hides our view of Dharmakaya? Not really, but only because we're coming from the Nirmanakaya side. So what do we do here? We're in the Sambhogakaya now. We're doing this, what I would call embracing zazen. Everybody has to learn how to do embracing zazen. Zazen without resisting, without clinging, without ignoring, because everything is inevitable, therefore incomparable, therefore absolute, therefore why fight it? Now, the next step is, if there's nothing I can do about it, then why don't I just let it go, drop it, put it down? I don't need to manipulate it in this zazen. I need to just allow it. Now I can get very curious about something underneath it, something right there. As I said last week, it's shot through it, it's embedded in it. But we don't notice it because we're so addicted to the Nirmanakaya side. Now we get into the Sambhogakaya side, we flip it over. Oh, it is! It is! It presents. Another way of saying it is, it's known. Dangerous though, because when we say known, we can fall into the Nirmanakaya again. Here I am here, there's the world out there, separate from me, all the thoughts about that. Remember what Master Jizo said to Hogan, not knowing is most intimate. But this is a different kind of knowing. This is a pure knowing. No object. Nothing objective. Rinzai said, there is not a stitch of anything objective in the universe. Not a stitch of anything objective. This is that Dharmakaya side. The sixth patriarch, Weineng, said, from the very beginning, not a single thing has ever existed, stood outside me. What is me? What does it mean, stood outside? Stood outside this knowing, this being, this fact. So in our zazen, now we're doing this penetrating zazen. And as we go along together, I will help everyone here understand how to do this penetrating style of zazen. It's very important. Because then you can solidly be in the Sambhogakaya and also be free in this Dharmakaya. And the Nirmanakaya adherent, the sitting on top, you can learn right away to liberate yourself from it when you see this Dharmakaya side. This is part of our penetrating practice of zazen. So we don't have more time to go into it tonight, and I'll kind of leave that hanging. So we've reached the end, and we'll say the four vows.